Welcome to Momentum Magnet, a podcast to inspire your growth. I'm Karen Morales, and your host in helping you find ways to make positive changes for your business, health, relationships, and life. We always have a path to a happier ending, so let's get started today. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Momentum Magnet. We're here every Friday talking to experts from around the globe so you can make momentum in your life and business. And today is one of the most important topics that has been on the front of all of our minds this year during COVID. It's the power of an outsourced team. It's the power of working together and creating a culture of understanding, even though you're not in the same walls of the office. I don't know about you, but I've come to a lot of realizations this year with how we can work differently. The first thing that came to me when I was thinking of this episode this week is that I actually went an entire year not knowing that Zoom had a lipstick filter. Now that I've discovered that, I feel like I can do anything. So today I'm bringing an expert from our Southern Hemisphere. I'm bringing Lynn Podetti to talk to us about how she's built multiple businesses using an outsourced team. And the beautiful part is using the power of the internet, we're able to have this conversation, even though Australia is still locked down and we couldn't actually sit next to each other. So as I end my day and she starts her day tomorrow, we're having a conversation about all things outsourcing, the power of adding virtual assistants to your team, and how she's grown multiple businesses using this model. Welcome, Lynn. How are you?
Oh, thank you so much. I love your intro. It was very engaging and entertaining at the same time.
I try because even though it's, 7:30 right after dinner time and we've had multiple things here in Massachusetts, I have my lipstick filter on Zoom that I've just discovered already exists.
And I can't tell, and I actually found that about, I think a month ago too. And I really loved using it.
I have the real
lipstick on now.
You actually look very presentable for 7:30 in the morning. So let's talk a little bit about your experience, how you've grown multiple businesses using the power of outsourcing. And then we're going to really dive into the conversation to help people understand as the way of the world transitions to this sort of remote workforce, what are some of the things that you do in your agency? We'll get to that later in the episode, like those tips and tricks everybody needs to do to get a culture of productivity, even if you're not in the same walls. So first, let's establish, how long you've been doing this and how big your business is. Let's talk about that.
So I've been working remotely for the last 10 years, and currently at Outsourcing Angel, we manage over about 70 people around the world. A lot of them come from the Philippines, but we do have people from all sorts of places. But my journey I started in outsourcing because I actually didn't have the skill set to do the things I need to do in my business. So my first business was an e-commerce store selling nail polish. And I didn't know how to do a website, didn't know how to do logo, didn't know how to do anything. So I actually had to get things done for me. And so I had to outsource from day one, but I didn't know about overseas outsourcing. I still used local people only to be ripped off by them as well. So thinking that you pay a good price, found them on Google on page one, meaning that you're going to find a great supplier, but I still got ripped off because they built it on a proprietary platform and never told me and said, this site still belongs to us even after you've paid those thousands of dollars. So I think I really learned the biggest lesson with outsourcing is no matter where you outsource, you need to know what you're doing. You need to have that experience and knowledge in that area that you're outsourcing to. Otherwise, it's very easy to get ripped off. But then when I was looking into getting to another business, because I realized I was not passionate about nail polish, I didn't realize that in that year of outsourcing things, so I did end up outsourcing to overseas because of my limited budget left that I had to run that business. I ended up accumulating these marketing skills and outsourcing, knowing how to work with people from overseas. And another thing, I did get ripped off by overseas people as well, picking the cheapest person, believing everything people say. And then that was why that whole year I didn't realize that I was secretly, becoming a great outsourcer. And then when I was looking into getting into another business, because I definitely didn't want to go back to a job. I had a son at the age of 20, so I really needed to have work-life balance. There was no way I was going back to a corporate life. And then I came across business owners who were just needing outsourcing help. And I didn't even know that I had a business right under my nose, because I was like, oh, you can go and find these people here and they charge you this much. I told them everything. but they didn't have the time. And that's when I started my first marketing agency, just basically project managing all the outsource projects for people. And ever since then, I realized the power of outsourcing in that you don't have to have the skills. You don't have to have the knowledge. I mean, it's good to know it eventually, like a bit of what you're outsourcing. But other than that, you're leveraging on someone else's time as well. So then hence, I'm able to build businesses without relying on myself.
Yeah, it's really important. I always talk to people about the fact that you have to hire ahead of need. Because if you're in a reactive, and that's just the same theory that we have in all aspects of our life. It's the reactive versus proactive stance and how you're going to, you know, help things move forward. And I found that I hired my first full-time employee when I was really unsure of what was going to happen in the next 3 to 6 months. But I knew if I didn't have that person on board, I couldn't grow. So that is a very challenging mindset. And the spirit of the entrepreneur usually will, you know, invest to grow and is a little more risk tolerant. But there are a lot of clients that I have to talk through getting over that burden of feeling ready to expand. Can you talk to us about that?
Yes, 100%. You never feel ready. And even after you've hired a few people, you're still not ready to hire the next one because you're always thinking about the financial, you know, consequences of it. You're like, what if it doesn't work? What if I invest in this person, then I don't make more. And so no matter when you hire, I could say that whether it's your first one or your 10th one, it's always a bit of a mindset, overcoming your mindset that you need to do. But at the end of the day, it's really knowing where you're spending the money. So if you're starting new, don't go and hire someone doing admin work, hire people to, you know, produce or execute the production for your client, right? So let's say you're doing logo design for people. And even if you are a graphic designer, don't sit there and do your logo. You should actually then outsource and get parts of it done, get someone else to do so that you could focus on marketing, let's say. And as you grow, you make more money, then you can start to look into hiring someone to just, you know, manage your day-to-day running of the business. But yeah, with the power of outsourcing, you don't have to hire someone full-time hours, you know, or everyone had to be local because local rates are always different to overseas, right? So there's a lot more flexibility with outsourcing. It could be project-based, it could be part-time, casual, full-time. And then whether it's in the Philippines, for example, is a lot cheaper than using people locally until you can afford someone local.
Yeah. And I love this idea. I've used various overseas resources for all types of projects, not only working in my own enterprise, but working for many Fortune 500s. We often did a lot of our web dev in India or Eastern Europe. And that was a very common experience, right? That you would send a Jira report at the end of the day and you would get the changes back in the morning. And it's actually quite beautiful, right? To be working on different time zones. I do think there is still, at least here in the United States, a bit of a nervousness for some people to put parts of their business in the hands of someone in another country. They worry about liability. They worry about consistency. What do you say to that end about, are we taking advantage of lesser priced hourly employees in other markets, or are we putting unnecessary risk in our business?
So there's two myths there that you just covered. One is, are we exploiting, right? Or are we like taking advantage of countries that are cheaper? In actual fact, it's actually the opposite. So my mission and the reason why I do what I do is I get to wake up every day knowing that if I could find another client who would offload tasks and free themselves, not only that, they are actually feeding another family in the Philippines who normally wouldn't have that opportunity. And then, you know, we go further than that. We actually reinvest our profits into doing a lot of charity work over in the Philippines. So coming from Vietnam, I grew up in Vietnam, pretty much similar to the Philippines. So I know how poor it could be. I know how, you know, less of an opportunity that we get. And I'm so lucky to be in Australia, the education, the business, the work opportunity, everything else. So I'm really grateful. And I'm like, how can I help more people in developing countries like Vietnam or Philippines? Well, the only way is you can't really bring them all over to Australia, but you can give them the financial support or employment. And this is not even free money. They're actually working for that money and freeing you up so that you can have more time for your family. And then yet they get to earn a good living as well. They're not actually getting exploited. They actually get paid more than working in normal jobs in their country. And they get to even work from home in my model, that these mums and dads actually get to also be a work from home parents and get to spend more time with the family.
And I think that's really important. I think that is like a very pervasive myth. And I think it's one that needs to be challenged because you're really giving you're taking that wealth and you're distributing it, right? Mm-hmm. And you're giving people better opportunities they may not have, and the opportunity to work from home. And I know I use people in the Philippines for a lot of graphic design over the course of the last year. And she was very, very thankful that she was homeschooling her three children. And we bonded on that a lot. Just the back and forth of, yeah, I get you. Today's a bad day.
Exactly.
The typhoon season this year was awful.
Yeah. And, you know, countries, they, you know, they keep experiencing storm and thing. And sometimes, clients might look in the angle of like, oh, but what if they always have problems with the internet? For me, I'm actually going, well, you know, poor thing, you know, that they not only experience the poverty in their country, yet they have to have all these weather things. But at the end of the day, as long as they can catch up on work, they can figure out how to do backup. You actually should be there and help them. Not go, well, I don't want that because that's just inconvenience for me. But at the end of the day, coming to that second point about whether it's risky to outsource to someone overseas, well, this is why my company exists as an agency, is because I spent all those years making mistakes, not knowing how to work with them. And yes, I did get ripped off as well. And because there are, at the end of the day in life, there are good people, there are bad people. And if you don't know what you're doing, you could get ripped off. And so an agency like us kind of protects that. It's like, we already know their culture. We know what the ins and outs and mistakes to avoid. And then we handle the payroll. We quality check. Even in the interview, we can fish out who's telling the truth, who's not. And we really minimize all that risk for someone, for a business owner. But if a business owner wants to save money, they might go, you know what, I just want to figure out this myself, try to hire. But then you're not really saving time because you're going to end up, you know, going through all these challenges. But if you are wanting to, you know, speed it up and just get the result, focus on doing what you love and being able to hire someone quickly and, you know, have a higher chance of it working out, then you work with an agency. And then it comes down to, it's not just in the recruitment, it's how do you, manage these people? How do you take care of them? Because they're still people. You're not buying a milk bottle from the petrol station. You're actually hiring a person who, on the other end, if you could nurture them, give them training, take care of them, they will become the biggest asset and they'll be so loyal to you and they become, you know, an integral part of your business.
I mean, and that's the truth with anyone working in your team. I mean, if you've raised a child or had a pandemic puppy this year, you know that the carrot often works much better than the stick, right? Mm-hmm. People stick around because they feel good. Mm-hmm. And they don't stick around because they're, you know, minimizing their punishment. That's called prison. That doesn't normally end so well. So I love what you said about that. And I've never had any delivery issues with people that I've worked with overseas, even when there were, you know, catastrophic things happening, and they happened in the United States. I mean, I had clients in Texas when that shut down for, I don't know, a week or so, and meetings got moved. So I think that's really important for people to understand. So how does it work when you're working with a virtual VA and in deciding what types of tasks are best suited to give someone living in a different market? Can you talk about some of those best case scenarios?
Yeah. So in our company, we specialize in marketing virtual assistants. So, you know, we work with clients who want help with their social media marketing, email marketing, website design, website development, all sorts of things that's related to marketing, as well as back-end support, admin assistance, and anything that you can do virtually, that is. But when it comes to what should I offload first? I really think that, you know, if you're just brand new, you're starting out, start outsourcing the things that are chargeable to the client, right? So like, for example, you're delivering a certain web project, well, start getting some of those parts outsourced rather than you getting caught up doing it, because then you limit your capacity. And then as you grow, you could then start looking at other things that you're spending time doing. So it's always something that you keep on progress and improve, and always auditing your task. So if you've been able to offload certain things and then that virtual assistant is taking care of that and they do it really well, then you start to look, how can I upskill this person to do what I'm currently doing, and then hire someone else to help her in those tasks that she was doing. So you continue to eventually only do the things that only you can do. So for example, for me right now, the only task that I've spent time doing is podcasts like this, YouTube video content, because it's me that needs to be in there. But I don't get caught up doing the editing, the, you know, writing captions, doing all those things. So you eventually just do things like networking, partnership, business development, things that literally you feel like only you can add value to the business, but everything else you can outsource. And then for There's a strategy that you can also do to audit your tasks. So you put an alarm and it with an interval of 30 minutes, and you do this for about a week. So what you do is every time the alarm goes off, you kind of do an audit of what did I just work on in the last 30 minutes? And you literally map it all out, because sometimes if someone asks you, hey, what do you work on? You're like, I don't know, I do a bit of LinkedIn, a bit of this, but that's so general that you're kind of missing out on all the little 5-minute tasks that you forgot that you actually do, because all those 5-minute repetitive tasks actually equals to lots and lots of hours. And then once you have all those tasks that you audit and kind of list out, you then go through a process where you eliminate first a bunch of tasks that you looked in, you're like, oh my God, I don't even know why I've been doing these tasks. You know, I'm just so caught up in the habit of doing it that I shouldn't be doing it anymore. You eliminate as much as possible. And then you would see where you can automate. So there are certain things you're like, actually, there's a tool that I heard that could actually do all the scheduling for me. Why am I doing this? And then so you try to automate. And then whatever else, you should look at delegating to a virtual assistant. And like I said, they can do everything to do that is virtual. And in my case, anything to do with marketing and admin. And then leaving you with just some things that you should be doing. And then you could even ask yourself, do I even need to do this now? Or is this something I can do later? And so I think business owners, we need to get in the habit of spending time more strategizing, planning our to-do list, and don't keep on getting caught up and, like you said, being reactive to everything, and sometimes taking time out to be proactive and go, what should I actually be working on? You know, what is it going to be the biggest impact into my business? What are those tasks that will, you know, bring the best ROI for myself?
So I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. What makes a great manager?
I think a great manager is someone that loves other people too. I think you can't be a manager if you just, you know, you don't even love people. You don't like talking to people. You just, you know, I think
that's interesting. I actually saw an interview with one of the managing partners from, I think it was Morgan Stanley. Sorry if it's not Morgan Stanley in the US. And he was in charge of the division that did mergers and acquisitions. And he said they created their own model based on how the first meeting with a potential merger would go. If the owner of the company that they were going to buy's first question was about themselves, it was going to be a disaster. If the person's first question was, what's going to happen to my team? Are they going to have to relocate? Are they going to have a business? Are they going to have a job? The deal would go smoothly. And I thought that was so
amazing. That is amazing. My God. Right? Yeah.
And it wasn't an official model, but it was just the team would joke around after every meeting, be like, going to be a doozy or going to be a good one. But that's so interesting. It's how well you take care of the people that support you.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, think about it. If you don't have a team and they don't love you or love your work, how are they going to service your clients? So there's no point in getting clients and you can't serve them. So for me, you know, there's been cases where we have kind of hard clients, you know, clients that we felt like was just actually giving us more of a hard time. And then, you know, it was very easy to say, you know what, let's just let the client go because they're not suitable versus letting the employee go, you know, and rather than blaming the employee that, you know, you could have done this and that, but I need the money from this client. You really think long-term because these are your staff that are like your babies. You don't just ditch your baby. You really have to understand and empathize. There are going to be situations where they have personal challenges and things that come up and being able to accommodate that. Sometimes they're having a baby. Sometimes they have legal problems in life. Who knows, right? And being able to really see that they're human beings and you too would need that kind of support if you were in their shoe. And if you can show them all that, it's like this trust bucket that you keep on putting in the trust coins in there and you build that up. And then, you know, they just work so hard for you. And I've got people that's been with me since the day one of me starting my businesses.
I think that's a key moment in every life of, in the life of a business owner. I distinctly remember the moment that I broke up with my first client. And where I actually wrote down all the things on a piece of paper and said, never again. Like, here is what I am here for. And here is what I'm not. And I think that's a really powerful move because it still goes with that idea that a very strong leader and a very strong CEO has just as strong of an opinion of what they want to do and what they will not tolerate. Just like a personal relationship, right? You have to know what you're here for and you have to know what's like a hard no.
Yeah, that's right. You have your principles, you're clear on that, and you stick to your values. And actually, we've got VAs that have such a strong value or understand our values so much that they even make decisions for us. Because sometimes there are decisions where it's a little bit gray and you're like unsure, but yet even the virtual assistants would be like, no, you know, look at all the times that we've done this and that, and able to even remind me, who is the owner of the business, about the values that we have built. The other thing I was going to mention, I just forgot while you were talking, I just had a thought and then I forgot. Never mind. As okay. You were talking, I had
the opposite end of the equation is what makes a really hard client, or in this case, a boss for one of these assistants working?
Yes. Okay. So when it comes to working with virtual assistant and you being the boss, you really need to learn to trust from day one. You know, put all the baggage aside, no matter who has ripped you off and who's, burnt you and ran off on you. You really need to start fresh and really give that trust and the benefit of the doubt. And then from day one, you really need to look in investing in them, meaning put some time in orientation, in training, in allowing mistakes to happen, and then and helping them to mold your process and systems. And, you know, one of the methods that we teach at our company is that when you give instructions to a virtual assistant and then they come back to you and it's wrong, you don't go, why did you do it wrong? And you can fix it like this. You actually use it as a way to actually build them up to become a decision maker for you. So you would go back and go, so what do you think? Why do you think it went wrong? And then they'll be like this. And like, what is wrong with the instruction that I gave you? How can I be more clearer for you? Because sometimes as an employer, you think that you've given them everything that they need, but your instruction is so unclear. Or the way you've delivered, or the way you skip things because you do it so much that you basically skip steps, right, when you're training someone else. One of the tip that we have is that don't jump into conclusion that it's the person's fault. Look into your process and then mold that process with your staff member, and then they eventually will really understand the reasons why they're doing what they're doing. They can actually identify problems for you and suggest solutions.
Side note, this process will work with every relationship in your life, your romantic ones, your friends, your children.
That's right.
When you're saying that, I'm thinking something like that popped up, not with an employee, but with a child in the last, 48 hours. And I thought I was so clear, but they're like, no, I didn't hear that.
Yeah. This is something I've only learned a few years ago, which has really helped me free me up, because even though I had a big team, I still was the bottleneck, because what happened was that they would come back with the result and it's different. And I would try to pick my brain and look for the solution and said, okay, I like you to do it this way differently. And so it was always going through me for the idea or the solution and approval. Whereas in the past few years, I've really changed that. It's like I spent more time now allowing them to come up with, of identifying what problem went wrong. What would be your solution? It might take a little bit longer, but basically eventually the freedom just came and they now just make all the right decisions without me, versus me spoon feeding, I guess, was what I was doing.
Yeah, because you're teaching people to fly versus teaching them to be reliant on you. And that's, again, really important, just life lesson in general.
Yeah.
So for folks that haven't been working remotely for their whole lives and that are still, trying to piecemeal this existence with a lot of offices in the United States are questionably going to return, and certainly not at full capacity or at everyone required to be there. What are some of your best recommendations for keeping productive at home?
Yeah, so I've been working online for so long. And so in a way, it's an advantage to us, because we found ways to work very productively, efficiently. It's all about time saving, right? We try to make the most of every time, every minute of the day. And so what we do, we avoid a lot of meetings too. So sometimes people go from offline to online and they try to hold on to the same behavior and actions as if they were doing offline, meaning they would call for a meeting, and everyone's there having lots and lots of meetings. Whereas for us, it's always about, we even have a spreadsheet that we get everyone to fill out their priorities, challenges, achievements for the week and all that there. So then when we're having a meeting, we're not reading it. We're not listening to everyone's update. We can read through it when we need to. And then when we're having a meeting, it's just discussing anything that the whole team needs to discuss. So it's always about finding ways, where can you actually give information without always holding someone's attention on Zoom online. Another thing is rather than holding these meetings and giving instructions and training, we're always thinking about scaling our system. So for example, if I need someone else to do something, I would try, and I know that it's something that more people would need to learn to do, apart from this person, might be other people. I already started to create some training tutorials. So
that is the key. I mean, you said two things that I want to pause on because they're so good. The first being, does this require a meeting? And Amazon instituted that policy where you were supposed to have a pre-read summation of what the discussion points are and what the outcome needed to be landed on prior to every meeting. And then in the first 5 minutes, people would read it. So there's no presenting of PowerPoint presentations and getting to the point. It was the point in the meeting was to come to the decision that needed a discussion. And if it didn't need a discussion, it didn't need to be a meeting.
That's right.
So that is beautiful. So you've taken that from the tech gods. the second piece, what was the second piece?
The Loom video. So creating instructional video.
So that is really good. But the important thing there that I always tell clients is, I just had this conversation this week about sales presentations. When you don't have a standardized sales presentation, we don't want to start by making 20. We want to start by making, you know, the core slide. So it's trying to make templatized solutions to things that you can use over and over again, and not trying to make so many variables. And I think that's a great philosophy to have. I've even taught clients who have done consulting engagements to say, pause, as you walk through this first consulting engagement, think about how the information that you generate and the presentations can be reused.
Yeah. So I guess my other point with the Loom video is more like a screencast tutorial. So let's say I need to update you, I'll ask you a question about this Excel spreadsheet that I've just created content. Rather than waiting for you to be online and when we can find time to discuss it, I just shoot a video saying, hey, I just did this thing, but I'm unsure about this. And I send it to you. So I guess it's consuming information on demand for your team rather than always holding everyone on the same time, same meeting, which will really, really save time as well. And when it comes to online, you still need to find a way to create a great work culture. So we always do fun activities. Like every month I have a CEO update where I go on Facebook Live, I put on my boss hat and update on what's happening. And then we have baby showers, we play tournaments. And
so how do you do that online? Like, what has actually worked that people think is fun? Because everybody's asking this question, like, how do I make Zoom fun?
Yeah, so I mean, we play different games. We've done trivia games. Sometimes we just play different things. And that's the thing, if you care about people, you're going to start to be a bit more creative with ideas to make it fun for people. So the last team meeting we had, you know, we had another game where it's like two truths and a lie. Because the thing is, you want to play a game, but it's not just about fun. It's about how do you get to know the other people more better. So that game was really about, okay, tell me two truths about yourself and a lie about yourself. So we get to guess, we get to gamify it, and we always throw in a few dollars, you know, $20 for winner or whatever. Throwing in a bit of money always jazz things up, make it exciting. And then by the end of it, you know, everyone's having a lot of fun. Or sometimes I tell people, one of the game is like, all right, you got a minute, go and find something yellow in your house and come back and tell me why is it significant to you, let's just say. And there's so many ways to play games. And even within our Slack channel, we have multiple channels that we have different names for the group. So we have like 60, 70 VAs that are working across our company. And then they all have team names. They get to name themselves like League of Legends or whatever names, the cool names that they have. And then they have team leaders, and then the teams would compete with one another in a sense. The more great work they do, the points that they get. And then at the end of the month, there's winners that, you know, get to be on the leaderboard and win prizes. And every team is like a little subculture that, you know, that, because the other day, the bigger your company is, the more disconnected it could feel. So how do you create a little subgroup so then everyone always feels like they've got this little mini community amongst the big community as well.
I love that. And you've even found that your services, so offering VAs, is not only going to, you know, smaller businesses and solopreneurs, you're working with big companies in Australia and beyond, right?
Yeah. So we still consider it small businesses because it's still, whether it's 20, 50 staff, I think Australia is still considered as small. I think medium is like few hundreds. And then the large is like corporations that we don't count. And with our model, I had a kid when I was 20 and I really couldn't stand the corporate life because I had no life, you know, going to work, dropping up my kids early and then picking them up after school care and all that. So when I quit my job, my mission was to, how do I create more jobs for people to work from home? So at Outsourcing Angel, all our virtual assistants work from home. So with that model, I feel like we probably can't cater to the larger corporations because then they're always going to go, I want everyone in an office like what we normally do, right? So the small businesses are a lot more flexible and understand the concept. And even they too probably work remotely. But who knows, right? In the future, as large companies are going remote, who knows, they might be more open to my model, which is having VAs working everywhere, not in an office kind of corporation.
I think everybody could use a VA, just like they could use a paid household manager or someone like that. If you have to really, you know, if you have busy with the money things happening. So I'm going to leave you with one last question. And what do you think the future of work looks like as we walk into 2021?
Yeah, well, luckily I've been doing this for the last 10 years and I'm glad the future is right here. you know, now that everyone's had a taste of working from home, they know what it's like, how much time you save, how much flexibility you get to be around everyone. So I just think everyone's going to crave for this. And if businesses don't allow that flexibility and working from home, I think more and more people are going to start their own business and, you know, become a business owner working from home and hopefully start outsourcing even more because they realize that building a team with virtual assistants from places like the Philippines is a lot more achievable, feasible than building other teams. So I think globalization is getting more stronger and bigger and more and more businesses will just go remotely and maybe there's no need for offices at all eventually. Right now is a hybrid model, I think, but I think eventually
I agree with you. But yeah. I never plan to go back to an office full-time ever unless my office is like my beach house, which I don't have yet, but I plan to have someday.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, that's why there's a growth in like those NFT or something, all those virtual museum, virtual art. So everything is virtual. So really we can do everything virtually.
I know, right? So Outsourcing Angel, Lynn Padetti, thank you so much for joining us all the way from Australia. So if people are now understanding how it is to work with a VA that lives outside their country, how can they get in touch with you to hear more?
Yeah, visit outsourcingangel.com. So currently we have a service where we help you find them and do everything for you, done for your approach, but we actually also launching our course. So this is for those who just, you know what, let me just learn how to do it. Maybe I still want to figure it out. So it's an affordable course that's coming out that you can learn and you can also get coaching by us as well. So that's for the do-it-yourself version. But yeah, visit outsourcingangel.com and all the information's over there.
And I mean, we really want to leave you with this idea that if you are a small or growing into a medium-sized organization and you're working anywhere, it is actually a benefit to hire people in other markets to help take some of those loads. But you definitely want to mitigate risk. So going through a reputable company is a good way to do it. So Lynn, this was really helpful. Thank you so much. And I hope you have a great day.
Thank you so much as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Momentum Magnet. We're here every Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time to share inspiring comeback stories. We want to hear your reviews and love getting your subscriptions on iTunes and Spotify. For show notes and past episodes, visit MomentumMagnet.com. I'm Karen Morales, keynote speaker, writer, and founder and CEO of Marketing Magnet, a fast-growing marketing agency for purpose-driven companies. Whether you are a business needing an agency, or if you are looking for weekly tips to get ahead, sign up at marketing-magnet.com to receive our weekly inspiration on getting more in your life and business.